I mean, we've already completely dismissed a professor, so I'm just gonna so let's just crack on.
You and I both know people who are, if you like, held back in life because they're putting things off and they're major things that are getting in the way of them moving on in their lives.
100%. I wrote down the word dumplings while you were talking earlier.
I say, dumplings. Okay, well, obviously, there's an obvious link there. Do tell.
And I have to say, it is a beautiful song. It
thank you,
brought tears to my eyes. It's really lovely.
In a good way.
Yes, in a good way.
I was terrified.
Of?
Well, that's what I was avoiding, was the feeling of fear.
And I messaged you, Nikki, with a sort of, shit! Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Carrie. And hi, everybody. And thanks ever so much for listening. So, what's been happening for me lately? Well, I start with a question, which is a sort of a lead-in.
Oh.
When did you last procrastinate in doing something? Was it recently?
Yeah. It's a funny question, and I'm not going to be able to give a very good answer. I have got much better at procrastinating because I use my boring, nerdy systems very much. And if it gets written down, I tend to get on and do it.
Yeah.
But actually, there is something that I'm putting off doing, and it's been on the list for 3 days. So yes.
Okay, so that kind of leads in, because that was a presumptive question, as we say in coaching,
yeah,
assuming that you have done some procrastination. So you were just saying that you've got better at it, if you like, and so have I, to be fair. So does that make us a chronic procrastinator, or do we procrastinate sometimes?
Chronic as in it's just something that happens all the time continually.
Exactly. Yes. I think you've already answered the question, to be fair.
What do you think I've answered? What's my answer?
I think you've answered that you've got better at it. Therefore, it may have been true in the past, but it's not so much now.
Yes, that is definitely true. I used to be awful. I'd put everything off, whereas I put less off now.
You and me both. So I've written here, because I made some notes when I was out on my walk just now. I think we're both proactive people who, when we want something, we go for it. But at times we, and I'm doing the air quotes here, procrastinate about certain things rather than it being across the board. But you and I both know people who are, if you like, held back in life because they're putting things off and they're major things that are getting in the way of them moving on in their lives.
100%.
And that's where this might be useful, but it's actually useful for everybody, including us, to maybe have a look at this, because I have a positive in mind as an example of stuff. But I was listening to good old Mel Robbins. I love her podcasts. And she was talking to Professor or Dr. Joseph Ferrari, and he's an expert on procrastination. And actually, I didn't agree with everything he was saying, for what it's worth, but some of the things he said were really interesting. And he was saying that 20% of people are chronic procrastinators, and he called them excuse makers, which I thought was a bit pejorative. but it's like, there's a reason why you can't do something.
I don't know what I think about that, because I would say, and a lot of the reading I've done on procrastination is that procrastination is not the same thing as laziness.
No.
And there can be various causes for it, but I think it's, I guess excuse making is quite a brutal.
It is, I agree.
And I don't like that.
Neither do I.
Because I think that's got a blame attached to it that is really unhelpful.
Yeah, there's always a reason. And I think procrastination, in inverted commas, let's just say that it's going to be in inverted commas for the whole conversation if it comes up.
Yeah.
Because to my mind, I have procrastinated when I've been uncertain. That's my big one, is if, and I procrastinated awfully with one particular design client on one occasion. And normally I'm, in the old days when I used to go and take a brief from a client, I would come away with thoughts starting to whiz around my head already on the drive home or the train or whatever. And on this particular client, it was 2 weeks and I had like a couple of days left before I was supposed to go back with some visuals. And I was thinking, what is it? What is it? And I suddenly realised I wasn't clear on the brief.
Right.
I didn't know what I was trying to do.
Good.
Exactly. So I rang him up and I just said, I just want to clarify, even though it was only 2 days ago, I just want to clarify a couple of things. And I sort of drilled down a bit more. And by the end of the 20 minutes or whatever it was, I came away and then I just got straight on with it. So that was a lesson to me that, yeah. And it can be, you know, it's basically, I think, procrastination is generally because we're trying to avoid a feeling. And because we're ADHDers, we feel things so deeply and yeah. we project into the future how we're going to feel that we avoid.
I would agree. I think there's two elements to it. And I did a radio show about procrastination. So I did do quite a lot of research into it. Mm. I mean, we've already completely dismissed a professor. So I'm just going to... So let's just crack on.
Can I just say, his point was, you've learned to be a procrastinator. You weren't born one, so you can unlearn it. So that was a positive.
Okay. I think that's true. So... The sort of ways to deal with procrastination from the research that I did is, as you say, it's very much about a feeling. So it's finding out what that feeling is. Mm. Is it fear? Is it... So I was talking to my mum when I was about to do the show and she said, oh, I always put off phoning the garage to get my car fixed. She said, I hate doing it and I just put it off and put it off. Mm. So I said to her, okay, what is the feeling, as you've just said, attached to that? And she said, well, they're just so bloke and they... And I know what she means.
Yes,
and she
yes.
said, and I never really, I don't know anything about cars and I don't really know what they're talking about. So which is a kind of fear.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. And then when you can talk through it, okay, so if they say something that you don't understand, what could you do? And she ended up with strategy. She's like, oh yeah, I suppose I could get on with it. So I think that is one side of procrastination it is 100% a feeling. And I would probably go so far as to say a fear of something.
Yes. So intimidation, feeling inept or unknowledgeable.
Yes.
Or
fear of failure.
Yeah.
Fear of being really good.
Yeah.
You know, fear of vulnerability, yeah. exposure, anything like that.
Exactly.
I think the other part of it, again, from this research I did, was about the time delay of reward, so the instant gratification, and that we are all somewhere on a continuum. Mm. And for some people, they are able to go, that task that needs completing in a month, if I start it now, I will get it done within that month and then I will feel happy. Mm. This is obviously in very simple terms. Mm. Whereas for other people, that delay is too big for them to bridge.
Yes.
It's something that's too far away. It has no immediate impact on them. And so they don't have it. And it gets to the point where those worlds, I'm doing it with my hands, but obviously the listeners can't see it,
yes.
get closer and closer together. And people's vary between it has to be done now, tomorrow, or in an hour's time, or in a week's time, wherever it is. Mm. But the impact of the event that you have to complete gets so close that it does become your present, and that's when you start taking action.
Yes. Well, I look on that as the fear of the repercussions of missing the deadline trumps the fear of the feeling that you're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
You meet that balance point. You tip over.
Yes, it is. It's a tipping point, isn't it?
Yes.
That you suddenly go, okay, all right, I will do this now.
Yeah.
Because the repercussions. But inevitably, I mean, I don't know about you, Nikki, but I've never worked with anybody who, when they get on and do something, it is actually worse than the feeling of procrastination. So, i.e., they always feel better when they've actually done it.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I completely agree. So the reason this has come up for me, and I know you've had a recent example, is because I think as ADHDers, we beat ourselves up with alarming regularity for procrastinating and not getting on with stuff. But you and I both have evidence that actually we can use it. It doesn't have to be actually procrastination. I've called it the difference between management by doing nothing, and thank you to somebody we both know for telling me about that one, versus delaying to avoid.
So say that again, management by doing nothing, as in it's a strategy. Yes.
It is a strategy, exactly. And it's, in my case, it's not always I sit down and I use my frontal cortex to decide exactly what I'm going to do and plan it. It's not like that. It's kind of like if there's something I really want to do and I'm not doing it yet, there usually turns out to be a reason. I've noticed that in my life. It's sort of tied in with intuition.
Right.
And it's very useful to know that's there, because it helps me decide whether I'm procrastinating or whether I'm actually being strategic, if you like.
Right.
And I notice almost in reverse, with hindsight, that I haven't gone on and done that thing. That's a bit weird. Why haven't I done that? And it's sort of something that I've noticed over my life. And I now use it, whereas it used to happen by accident. And it's really handy to know when it's happening. So it's management by doing nothing, if you like, versus delaying to avoid, which is procrastination. So I'm trying to avoid a feeling or whatever it is. And as you said earlier, you know, if you can identify what it is that you're trying to avoid your feeling, then you can perhaps deal with it. It's the awareness thing. So recently, as you know, I finished a song. And for me, it was an incredibly important song, possibly one of the most important songs I've ever written, because it was for my wife. And it was for her big birthday, as you know, because you came along to the celebratory weekend. And I said, because it was February at the time, I said, I started writing this in February 2015. And I finished it on Sunday. So it was about standing in the garden, looking up at the moon, feeling lonely, hoping there'd be somebody out there that I'm going to meet, or feeling actually that there was someone out there and I was going to meet them, and I was wondering if they were looking at the moon at the same time as I was.
And I have to say, it is a beautiful song.
Thank you, lovely.
Tears to my eyes. It's really lovely.
In a good way.
Yes, in a good way.
As somebody kindly said on Facebook when it was posted, now we're all crying.
Yes, stop that noise.
In a good way, please God. Anyway, so as you can imagine, songwriting is a vulnerable thing. I don't mind being vulnerable. I'll be vulnerable with the best of them. It doesn't bother me too much. But this was particularly important to me because, as I say, I had the idea, started it 2 weeks before I met my wife. And then I met my wife and everything's lovely. So I didn't carry on writing it, because we tend to write songs when we're feeling full of angst and so it's cathartic, you see. So it sort of sat there, and I nearly lost it, the original chords and things, because I recorded it on my phone, and then I upgraded my phone and we had to go into the Vodafone shop and try and recover it because it got lost, and there was a big tale behind it. Anyway, and then about 3 years later, she said to me, did you ever do anything with that song? And I said, oh, no, I haven't. And so time went on. Life carried on. Other priorities rose to the top at that time, which sounds horrid, but it's just life, ADHD life. So I suddenly had the thought about 6 months ago or more that, oh, what could I give her for her birthday? And I had in mind a nice sort of physical present. So that was fine. An Apple Watch. So I thought, fine, that's a good present. And then I suddenly thought, but the best present you could give her, Nikki, is that song.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the Dark. That's what it was called. Well, I've got goose pimples. And I thought, just... yes, okay. So I had this knocking around in my head, but of course I had 6 months or whatever it was. And we were preparing in lots of ways for this big weekend and everything else. And I knew this song. And you know what? I just didn't get on with it. And I even had a couple of coaching conversations with people about it. And then with about a month to go, I suddenly thought, okay, so I made it real by chatting it through with another of my coaching buddies and saying, right, because we have this productivity divas thing where we... we meet up twice a week for about supposedly half an hour and we just get on with stuff, usually paperwork or anything, could be cleaning or something that we don't want to do. And so it's like a buddy thing. And so I said, right, I'm going to start writing this song again. I'm going to get it out and listen to it. So I got it out and started listening to it. So that was the transition. But of course, did I do anything over the next couple of weeks? No.
Dave.
And then finally, I started it in earnest. My wife was going away for a few days and I hadn't really strategically thought, oh, I'll do it then. But there was a kind of a thing running at the back of my mind. There was a space where I knew I could get on with it because obviously it was a secret. So I did. And I made myself sit down and pick up my guitar and do things and listen to things because I was terrified. That's what I was avoiding, was the feeling of fear. Because I thought it was a really good idea for a song. And it meant such a lot to me as a song idea. And I loved the chords I'd come up with and the tune. I just hadn't written the words. And the words are my least favourite bit. I'm quite good at writing words now, but I still have a fear of writing words because I, as a kid, I didn't think I was very good with words. So there's that going on. But mostly I wanted to live up to the song.
Mm-hmm.
My love for my wife. And also I wanted to live up to me. I wanted it to work. I desperately wanted it to work. And I didn't want all this fear to stop me doing it well, because you have to be relaxed to be creative. This is one of the things I say to my clients, my creative clients, is, you know, be relaxed. Find ways to help yourself be relaxed environmentally, or what you're wearing or where you are or whatever it happens to be. Anyway.
Was there also a pressure that you were going to perform it at that weekend away, and there were lots of, you know, I don't know, 10 of
in
us.
In front of a bunch of singers and musicians and people who know about music.
Yes. Yeah.
And only about 10 people.
Yes.
Or nine or 10 people. Whereas when we were on the stage of the MGM Grand Las Vegas in front of 10,000 people, that was exciting.
Yeah.
Put me in a room with 10 people where you can see the whites of their eyes.
Yeah, it's much more intense.
Oh, dear.
I get that.
Yeah. And also, you know, on a practical level, I played the guitar since I was 12, and I've got some lovely guitars, and it's my thing. And I'm good at it, except I had 18 months where I couldn't play because I had golfers and tennis elbow in both elbows. I couldn't pick up jars and take the lids off or anything. And so I've had to work. And one of the things that's triggered it is the guitar. So I've had to do the 5 minutes a day thing laboriously over about a year to get back to where I am now. So I don't have the unconscious competence that I had before. I have to think about it a bit more. And so there's all sorts of little hang-ups going on in there. Anyway. The upshot was that I did it all in the last week. I finished it on the Sunday before the following Saturday. And our friend who did the harmonies for me, bless her, she finally got the final version on the Thursday evening while she was driving down for the weekend. And we had a whole 10 minutes to practice in your room. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, we had people on standby to intercept my wife if she happened to come upstairs. So that was it. So it was all really scary.
And how did you feel when you completed it?
Relieved. Well, you could see in the video that was posted, emotional, incredibly emotional. There's a couple of jumps because I did make a couple of wrong chords, and I didn't want to put that out there because of professional pride, if you like, and actually it flows better. That's the point. It flows better as a song. There's a strum in the middle that, because I was so nervous, is cut short. It's supposed to be the difference between the first half of the song and the second half, where there's a change. And I just got over myself and I just put it out there because it's the emotion that's... I've got emotional now. It's the emotional side of it that's really important out of all of that.
Mm.
My Britishness is trying to hold me back from saying this, but I'll put the YouTube link to the video in the show notes so people can watch it if they want to.
Yes.
So the reason I brought this up is because part of me, my intuitive side, knew that if I left it till the last minute, I'd get the dopamine going from the panic and the fear and the deadline approaching, and it would just come out well. And I remember on the Sunday morning that I finished it, I wasn't happy when I went to bed on the Saturday night. There was a section that I couldn't think what to say in it. And I came down in the morning and I just thought, just repeat the beginning of the first verse and change it from me to you. And that did it. And I was going, excuse me, around the kitchen. Leaping around and then that led to the third bit, which was about us. So it kind of all made sense suddenly. So that's using a deadline to get your mind in the state where you can actually perform at your best.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting example, Nikki, because there's a difference, isn't there? Well, maybe it is managing by doing nothing. I think that's probably a really good example of that in that time that you weren't doing it, it's all still ticking around in your head and
percolating.
Maybe you'd consciously left it till that last week or subconsciously left it till that last week because you knew that that would be you at your best because there was a, like you say, the dopamine, the deadline, all of those sorts of things.
Mm. I want to ask you about your thing in a sec, but can I just say that there was another parallel from which I learned, which was on our course, our coaching course that we did, which took me a couple of years, not least because of broken arms and my mum dying and other things. But I wanted to get it over the line before the two. We could have extended it over the 2 years by paying £100, which was, you know, but I didn't want it to drag on over that. So I wanted to use the deadline to get me get it over the line. And we had to do this 10 questions paper at the end, if you remember. I'm sure you do.
Yes.
And I'm sure you were terribly organised with that in advance, but I deliberately left it until the last 2 weeks. I knew I was going to leave it because, A, I wouldn't know what I was going to know, and it was testing you on what you'd learnt. So there's no, I knew somebody who did it a year before, and I was thinking, how can you know what you're going to know by the end of the course? So I knew, and I'd planned strategically, I deliberately planned on that occasion to leave it till the last couple of weeks. And there were 10 questions and some of them were quite short. So it was about 7 days worth of one a day or two a day if they were the short questions. And it worked beautifully because it really focused me. I looked at all sorts of videos that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have done if I, and it was really useful, much as I gritted my teeth and railed at it. It actually was really useful. It helped me review all sorts of things and it sort of summed up all the learning. But I that was an example of me using the deadline deliberately. And it got me focused. The dopamine got me focused.
That's really interesting how we use deadlines differently. Mm. The two of us, but also there are different sorts of deadlines. So for example, I think teaching taught me a lot about using deadlines. And one strategy, I mean, I was working with a client this morning who's a student, and we were talking about, and she has ADHD, getting those deadlines on a, she's got a year to view big year planner up in her room. And I said, well, let, you know, get those deadlines on there. And we were talking about how the thing that I learned when I was teaching was very much working back from those deadlines, because until I started teaching, and you know, when I was a student, things like, I mean, it was awful. Everything was, you know, doing the, you know, the traditional doing your homework on the bus on the way to school, asking for extensions for things. Always, yeah. Always. Yeah. I just never got anything done. People would ask me to bring something and I never would bring it. And, you know, I just was the person who'd always forgotten everything. I just didn't get round to doing anything. But I think teaching really did change that for me, because your workload is so, A, your workload is so vast. B, your workload is split into short, medium and long term. So as a teacher, you have to think of your yearly overview, your termly overview, and then your short term is the sort of the week. And then I suppose your micro one is the day. But all of those things have to, you have to plan for. So I got, I think, pretty good at, say, if I knew I had reports to write for my class. And when I started, yes, they were like big, long, like 3 pages of A4 with a box for each individual subject you had to write. And there was no software to click on word banks or things. Mm. And so I sort of, I really, this is how I learned how to manage myself, was sort of, okay, how long does each one take me to do? Well, maybe half an hour. So, okay, if I did 2 a day or 3 a day, over this period of time, that's how I could, you know, and so I would work like that. And
yeah.
I'd think, well, when I've got holidays and I don't want to, and also times I don't want to work, so I don't want to do it at weekends because I've got my family. Mm. You know, that evening I work late because I've got a meeting after school, so I won't be able to do them then. So really, really working around how long everything's going to take me. So my procrastination, I would say now, isn't, apart from the exception that I'm going to give you, that you know about from last week.
Okay.
But I think that is slightly different.
It is different from what you've told me, yes.
So,
yeah, go on.
So things like getting my tax return in, or if I've got an appointment in advance that I need to prepare for, things like that. I am pretty organized. Mm. I work back from that deadline and I'm very realistic about, and use those skills like what's the smallest amount of time I can do, and, you know, let's be realistic and make it manageable. And I'm pretty good at chunking things down and getting it done. So where I'm not very good at being organized and where I do procrastinate is, well, on the one hand, things that don't have a deadline. So a good example, like my mum's, phone the garage.
Yes. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yes.
Tomorrow, mañana.
And I do come across those sort of blocks, those obstacles of like, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't generally enjoy admin and emails.
Can I interject? Sorry.
Yeah.
Can I just ask? It's just occurred to me. Is it that you don't want to do X? I've just wondered, sometimes, not always, sometimes it's that, or in fact, maybe often, I'd rather do Y.
Well, yes.
So X is there. If it doesn't have a deadline or something, and it's like the choosing of what you're actually going to do, and the choice never gets made because you don't want to do it.
Yes, and I was definitely, I wrote down the word dumplings while you were talking earlier.
I say, dumplings. Okay, well, obviously, there's an obvious link there. Do tell.
Because my very pictorial brain, when you were talking about all the things, you know, you have to do and getting things done, I was picturing like a big thing of boiling water and you chuck the dumplings in and they sink. When they're ready, they float to the top and you fish them out.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to think dumplings from now on.
Dumplings. I think that can be part of the procrastination, is that there are things that will just never float to the top.
Or they take a very long time, and sometimes they just float off into the yes. or sink off into the distance.
Absolutely.
Oh, but that's the management by doing nothing, because sometimes they just sort themselves out.
Agreed. Absolutely. Yes, they do. And I think I do the things that interest me the most, I will get those things done. The other things take the effort, and that's where my time planning things.
Yes.
You know, because when I was a deputy head, it's like, I can't just say, no, I'm not writing my part of the school development plan.
No.
You know, but that would be my idea of hell. Mm. So I would have to plan it, and I'd have to plan, how will I do this? What's the best place to make this happen? Do I work at home? How do I reward myself to make it happen? All those things that we work with our clients about now. Mm. How can I break it into the smallest chunks so I do it in little intervals? Mm. All of those strategies definitely make a difference to me.
The 10-minute con. I can do 10 minutes of anything. And of course, by the time we've done 10 minutes, we're into it, usually.
Yes.
And I'm allowed to not carry on after the 10 minutes, whereas some people it doesn't work for. It feels they feel they have to, once they've started, they must carry on. For me, I need to know that I can stop. Because I know I can stop, I don't.
Well, that's the point of the exercise, isn't it?
Exactly. It is, yeah.
That you give yourself permission. You tick it off. If you've done your 10 minutes, you can tick it off and stop.
Yes.
And as I think I've shared on this podcast before, but it's worth sharing again in case I haven't, because I may not have done. motivation only comes after we've started something, full motivation. We are very rarely motivated to do something beforehand, unless it's actually a reward in itself for us. There is something in it for us.
Ah, can I interject? Because I could see you were going somewhere, but I don't think that's true for me, because I talk to designers about the pull. When you get the pull, is that that's the time to do it. So I could, in my old
yes, life, but then you've already started. I think, do you see what I mean?
No, the starting, okay, all right. So I've had the brief and then I've got my 2 weeks or whatever to do the logo. Mm. And I could be doing something totally different. As long as I have time to stop, if I get the pull, I might sort of suddenly see something to do with it or think about it. And suddenly it's in my head and that pulls me in. And I allow myself to get that pull if I've got the time. And I'll stop doing what I'm doing and I'll go with the pull.
Yes, but I disagree with you in terms of that being different to motivation. I think that the pull is when you actually start something. Do you see what I mean? Or it is the start, or the thinking that's gone before you think, oh, I need to get going on this. You have already actually started it in your head, even subconsciously. Do you see what I mean?
I think so. Oh, is it the action? Because is it the actions we're looking for, or the thinking? Because a lot of the stuff about procrastination is thinking doesn't get things done. It's the actions that gives us the progress and the confidence.
Yes, but I think in the instance you're giving, that the thinking motivates the action.
Okay.
Because your brain is going, oh, I could do it like this, I could do it like that, I could do it like that.
You get excited about it.
You get excited and then you get on and do it. So I think that excitement is motivating because actually you've already started. If when I was planning things or given an interesting topic, and my brain will start going ooh about it, and whether I am actively planning it or not, I have started it. But then the second phase of that is the getting on and doing it, and it maybe it's that bit, the motivation only comes after you've started.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't going to work for everybody. I didn't make this up. It was on a podcast that I was listening to and they were doing a study of motivation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to fit for everybody, but for a lot of people, motivation comes after you've started, like the 10-minute rule.
Yeah. Is it that it reinforces it, the motivation? I mean, they always say with ADHD is don't try and, as they horribly say, eat the frog, which is what works for neurotypicals, which is you get the worst job out of the way in the morning, first thing.
But that can work.
It can. Mm. But we tend not to want to eat the frog. So we go and do something else because we'd rather do something else. So if you can do some small things, like, as I think I've said on the podcast before about, you know, ordering a supplement or something small, small tasks, two or three small tasks first thing can sort of ease you and give you a little bit of dopamine hit and that you've done something and you feel the reward from that. And then you can tackle the sort of larger mid-sized type things.
And I think that that's in line with what I'm saying about that once the motivation or the incentive, whatever you want to call it, comes once you've started.
Yes.
Because you're into it. The start is often the hardest bit to do.
Yes.
Because you've got that sort of blank paper syndrome.
Absolutely.
And it's like, ugh.
Absolutely. So tell me about your recent experience.
Well, I was talking about something else, but I've lost my train of thread on that.
I'm so sorry.
No. That's what we do to each other all the time. I was saying something about motivation, blah, blah, blah. Oh, just the difference in tasks, that there are some things that I'm really organised with and will work back. The frogs, to be honest.
Yes.
I am very disciplined at because I've had to do it for my job.
Yeah.
But it's those little things that maybe don't have a time limit that the dumpling thing comes to, and I will pick off all the other things.
Yes, the garage.
Phone the garage. And that's what I was saying. I don't really like dealing with admin and emails. I actually have quite an email problem. Mm. And in our barbershop chorus that we sing with, I'm, as you know, the events coordinator, which has quite a lot of emailing as part of it to organise things. But I have said to the members of the management team, don't expect quick replies from me, because there are lots of days where emails will come in and I cannot process them or read them. But my strategy for that, because to me that's a procrastination thing, I just think I can't do it and I will delay doing it. So my combative strategy to deal with that is to say, I put a time aside, normally on a Friday, where I will do my emails and I will go through and I keep an eye on them as they pop in case there's something that is really urgent that I think, oh, I need to know this or read it. But generally, which is, you probably notice, you will get a flurry of emails from me in the course of a 3-hour period.
But that works for me.
Yes, where I will suddenly send lots of emails to address everything, but then you won't hear from me again for a week, you know, because I just won't deal with them.
That's you blocking in, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And me blocking in, because I can just go tick, tick, tickety tick and do them all at once. And it's brilliant.
Yes.
So it works for everybody.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah. So I do put a lot of things off. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm like, oh no, I never procrastinate. But the good example recently was last week. And I thought, I would love to do an online event, a free workshop for neurodivergent women to celebrate themselves on International Women's Day. And I was out running and I had this brilliant idea and I'd sort of thought, oh yeah, I could do that and I could do this and I could do that. That's as far as we got. There was no flesh on those bones at all. It was a very, very, very poor sort of one cell.
It was an idea.
It was an amoeba. And I thought, yes, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. So, of course, then became very motivated to do that. So I set up my Eventbrite and I put it out and I advertised it and all the rest of it. Anyway, I didn't then get down to planning it because I thought, well, I'm going to see if people sign up. I hadn't left, you know, to be honest, I'd only left 5 days before putting it out and it being International Women's Day. So I thought, I haven't got a lot of time to advertise this. It may be that it just doesn't grow legs this time. And I think I had one, maybe two, who'd booked up for it. And so I thought, oh, you know, am I going to do it for just two people? And I thought, well, I probably will, but I'll do it differently. I'll just do, because you don't want to go in with two people or one. I mean,
no.
There's generally not 100% turn up rate for things. So I thought, I could end up with one person. I've done all this work. I will just give them a coaching session, or we could talk, you know, we'll work it out one way or another. Anyway, so the day before, in fact, the afternoon before, loads of people booked on. It sort of pretty much sold out all the tickets. It sold out. The tickets went, it was free, but you get your ticket. And I messaged you, Nikki, with a sort of, shit! So I had this brilliant idea, and now all these people are turning up. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm doing this at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, and I haven't even started on it. And Nikki very kindly gave me some words of wisdom. Do you want to take over from there, what you said back to me?
Oh, God, what did I say? Oh, was this about strength?
Yes.
A strength. Yes. Okay, so a while back when we were having one of our mutual coaching sessions, I seem to recall saying to you, because you'd said something about, oh, well, I just tend to stand up and wing it. And you were being sort of negative about yourself, disparaging in a way, and saying, well, you know, I just sort of stand up and I don't really know what I'm talking about. I just stand up and just do it. And I said, so it's fear of public speaking or something. And you said, well, no, I don't really have that. And I said, you know how rare that is. So that was, I said, that's a strength, the fact that you can stand up and not get worried about public speaking. So that's brilliant. And then I said, so this winging it thing, which sounds like it's not a good thing, that sounds brilliant. That sounds like a strength to me, that you can stand up there and be spontaneous, be spontaneously brilliant without any preparation. So is that what happened?
Well, I'm making a face about the brilliant part, but spontaneous.
All right. Spontaneously competent then.
Yes, I will go with competent. And I think that goes from, as many teachers will tell you, you are often in a situation where you could be pulled on to talk about anything. And as a deputy head, I would often be like, oh, there's these 600 children waiting for an assembly and the person hasn't turned up. Can you do it? And you've got 20 minutes to fill suddenly. So you are good at thinking on your feet. And most teachers are. So Nikki reminded me of that. And that sort of actually come on. And it made me reflect and think, you know, I can do this. I don't need to have it absolutely tied down. So I spent half an hour capturing, and I had thought about it, capturing the thoughts that I'd put down. I put a few slides together, which I then forgot to show in the talk.
Oh, no, but putting the slides together was part of the percolation of the preparation.
It was. And I did refer to it. But the thing that was great was all these women turned up for the talk. And I was able to share that story of having this great idea, forgetting about it, not getting round. Because I don't, you know, I do find it quite hard sometimes putting these things together. And it didn't, in the dumpling analogy, it didn't pop to the top for me to do. It was there on the list, but it had been on the plan it out a few days.
It was simmering.
It was.
Lurking in the depths of the saucepan.
It was in the depths of the saucepan, getting soggy.
Yes.
But actually, having to do it under pressure, I nailed it down and it made me tune into those natural strengths you have of being able to talk and all those things. And being able to share that then with these women in a jokey, funny way, I think sort of eased the tension. And I got halfway through and I sort of said something like, oh, I had a PowerPoint with some of these things on. Oh, well, never mind. You know, I made it. You don't need to see it because we've missed our moment for that. And people laughed. And I think it sort of breaks the tension. People see you as human and honest about yourself. So, yeah, whether that's procrastination or a need for a deadline, I think it's an interesting topic. There's definitely different facets to it, aren't there? So there's pure procrastination because of possibly, like you say, that fear of something, an avoidance of something, a feeling.
A perceived feeling.
Yes.
A projected feeling that we think we're going to feel. And in fact, as you said earlier, when we get on and do it, actually, the relief is wonderful. And if we don't do it, all we're doing is extending that feeling over a longer period of time, like weeks sometimes, or months or years in some cases. So if we just get on and do it, and I'm a pretty proactive person, and so are you, but there are things that I do not get round to. And I'm just trying to do things as they come in now. I'm trying to get much better at doing that rather than, you know, it's like the post that comes in and you just stick it in a pile. Well, I'm still trying to address piles from a while back now, from when my mum died. So I'm now trying to stop the new stuff becoming another pile.
I guess it depends on the impact of the procrastination. So you and I are, as we've seen, there are things that we procrastinate about, but they don't have long-term or significant impact on our lives now.
Now, no, absolutely.
And now is a key word.
Yes, because as Dr. Joseph Ferrari says, we can unlearn procrastination.
Yeah, yes.
We can learn how to deal with it better.
So it is learning to know why you procrastinate. Is it the fear? Is it the dumplings that you just end up doing all the other things that rise to the top? Is it, and I think this is another big one for me, starting.
Yes.
Just that, how to start.
Yeah.
And we had that conversation about motivation, but, you know, how can we get ourselves into a good position to start? And sometimes it's planning. Planning your start is important. What do I need? Where will work for me? How long will I do it for? That's realistic and reasonable and enjoyable.
Yeah. What can I find in it that is enjoyable?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as always, that was a really interesting conversation, Nikki, and lots of things to think about. I don't think we've come to such a clear conclusion as we always do, but it's certainly interesting to have those bits of learning along the way for us to reflect on and think about.
Yes, well, I sometimes like not loose ends, but something in that direction, because it prompts extra thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks ever so much, Carrie. See you in a couple of weeks or so.
Thanks, Nikki. Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us on our ADHD journey. If you can spare a sec, a review or ranking would be hugely appreciated by us. 5 stars would be marvellous, but whatever you think. Every single one really does help. As well as on your favourite app, you can find us on YouTube and Instagram at theADHDConnection_podcast. So we hope to see you on there. Thanks again for listening, and bye for now.